Hi guys, it's Tony Robbins. You're listening to Habits and Hustle. Crush it.
Before we dive into today's episode, I first want to thank our sponsor, Therasage. Their Tri-Light panel has become my favorite biohacking thing for healing my body. It's a portable red light panel that I simply cannot live without. I literally bring it with me everywhere I go. And I personally use their red light therapy to help reduce inflammations in places in my body where, honestly, I have pain. You can use it on a sore back, stomach cramps, shoulder, ankle. Red light therapy is my go-to. Plus, it also has amazing anti-aging benefits, including reducing signs of fine lines and wrinkles on your face, which I also use it for. I personally use Therasage Tri-Light everywhere and all the time. It's small, it's affordable, it's portable, and it's really effective. Head over to Therasage.com right now and use code BEBOLD for 15% off. This code will work site-wide. Again, head over to Therasage, Therasage.com and use code BEBOLD for 15% off any of their products.
What are the top five best overall exercises to get overall fit and strong and lean?
Best number one is walking. Like walking is without the, just the best exercise. It's a lot of people don't call it an exercise and I just think they're idiots. It's the most researched and most easiest and underestimated form of exercise in the world. If you look at the populations of people who are the longest living and healthiest, they walk the most. Mm-hmm. They get anywhere usually from like 7,500 to 16,000 steps a day on average. And they are the healthiest, longest living people in the entire world. So walking is, it's, you don't need anything special for it. You don't need a gym. You don't just like walking is without question. If I could only pick one, that would be number one. From there, if we're going to get more into like specifics of like actual more exercises you could do in the gym, I would say,
walking is great for your overall cardio, of course. But how about in terms of walking is not going to tone you up though?
No, right? No, it's not. No.
So there's a difference between, I think, okay, let's break it down a little bit more. For overall fat loss or more lean muscle mass, can you just tell us like what people can do for like segments like that? So if you want to get stronger, you gave some great exercises to get stronger without building, bulking up. You said the kettlebell swings and explosive movements. How about for overall fat loss and then to get toned and lean?
Yeah. So, people get mad when I say this, but for fat loss, it's plate pushes, fork put downs, table walkaways. These are all like the best exercises you can, it's eating less. It's being in a calorie deficit. There's no one exercise that's going to, you know, burn fat here or there, make you lose fat. You could be working out for hours a day. And, but if you're eating too much, you're not going to lose fat and you'll gain fat. So
100% agree. And this is why people don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that it's about calories in, calories out. It's like, it becomes like, it's like such a bad word. Why are people so offended by this? I don't understand.
It blows my fucking mind how offended people are in general. And then not to mention, like there are people who they won't even say the word diet anymore. Like they'll type D*ET. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you? I don't know if I could swear on this podcast,
it's fine.
A lot of people are like, diet's a bad word. I'm like, all right, this is getting so stupid. Not to mention, there are many diets people will go on that have nothing to do with fat loss. Like people will change their diet to gain weight. People will have a certain diet based on their allergies that they have.
Totally.
Diet doesn't necessarily mean weight loss, and weight loss isn't inherently bad. And a lot of people need to lose weight. A lot of people, the people who say things like, no, weight loss is bad, da, da, da. It's like, you've never worked with someone who's 100 pounds overweight. And like, they're in pain. Like they can't move because their joints are aching, because you have no idea how their confidence is shot. You have no idea like how it's affecting them mentally, physically, emotionally. The idea that they're just demonizing weight loss altogether. Not to mention, let's say someone just wants to lose 15 pounds. Who the fuck are you to say, no, you're not supposed to do that? Like it's their choice.
Absolutely. Listen, you're singing my song. I could not agree with you more. I find it's unbelievable that now it's like a bad, it's you are demonized if you're saying that's a bad thing. When really, correct, like everybody in their head, like, I mean, I don't know one person really, if they're being honest and true with themselves, are really happy when they're 100 pounds overweight. I mean,
no one. You can't be.
You cannot be because forget about the aesthetic. I'm not even talking aesthetics because of all the other things, all the other health issues that come with it.
Correct.
And if you're somebody who like comments on that or just makes note of it, you're a bad person. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's actually really sad. And I think what's happened is a lot of people who've been unsuccessful with losing weight, instead of addressing why they've been unsuccessful, they just then turn around and say, well, I'm happy this way. And who are you to say I shouldn't be happy? It's like, listen, I want you to be happy. And if you want to stay that way, that's fine. But let's not pretend that like you can be healthy and be 100 pounds overweight and promote other people to do that, because this is doing more harm than good.
Absolutely. Because obesity in itself is one of the biggest pandemics I think we have in the world right now, or in the 100%. U.S., you know?
Worldwide. It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. All over the world. It's unbelievable.
It's
one of the leading, obesity is like the starting point of so many health issues, whether it's high blood pressure, whether it's heart attacks, strokes. Let's look at COVID. I mean, the people who were most likely to die from COVID were the vast majority overweight and out of shape. Like it puts you at risk just by being overweight. It's not anything bad against them as people. It's just saying, if you are overweight, you are at a significantly greater risk of dying of basically all cause mortality, of literally anything. You are at a greater risk of dying if you're overweight. Period, end of story.
And exactly. It is period, end of story. I don't know how, it doesn't have to, I mean, you can just see all the research. People can see all the research that backs that, right? So let's go back to that. So walking great for overall health, right?
Yes.
Like for overall health is a number one. So if someone wants to get more lean, you know that I'm going to say this, you know, it's actually much easier when you're on like a weight loss journey, let's say, when you have 50 pounds to lose or 30 pounds to lose. Where it gets to be very tricky, where a lot of people fall into, is this like 5 to 7 pound spot, which is like, they just have like a little, like, you know, a little bit of love hand, they have a little bit to lose and they really want to tone themselves up. That's where, because you know, and they're already working out and they're already eating healthy. What can you do for that? Give us some. So
you're 100% right. This is the hardest, because in order to lose that last little bit, you're going to have to be more strict. You are, like, inherently, like when it's sort of like, when you're developing a skill, whether it's maybe social media, for example, when you're first starting out, it's like, it's almost easier because there's so much to learn. You put something out, you learn something so fast. Or when you're going to the gym, when you're strength training, when the first year is the best. It's like you get stronger every single time you go to the gym. You're learning, it's amazing. But as you go year after year after year, you get more and more advanced. The learning comes in small, teeny increments. Like you learn a little gem here and a little gem here. You put on a little bit of strength to this lift every like couple of months. It's not ever stronger every single time. It's like it gets harder the better you get at it. And when you have a teeny tiny bit of fat to lose, that means if it's really worth it to you, and who am I to say whether it is or isn't, but if it's worth it to you, you have to inherently be more strict. You have to dial in your nutrition. You have to dial in your workouts. And I think one of the most overlooked aspects of this specific individual is strength training to build muscle, is making sure they're going to strength train enough to build more muscle so they can increase their metabolism, and also having preset higher calorie days. I think this is super important. Not always eating in a higher calorie and a calorie surplus, but one of the issues that will happen here is when you're trying to be super strict in a calorie deficit all the time, it's very difficult to be consistent with that. It's very difficult to 7 days a week, nonstop, be in a calorie deficit. So I like to do what's called calorie cycling, where a couple days a week, you will deliberately eat higher calorie, closer towards maintenance, so that you can, it will help your metabolism, will help increase a little bit, it will help with your leptin sensitivity, insulin sensitivity, but also what it's going to do is it's going to make it more realistic for you. You have a couple days where you know you can eat more calories, it will make it more sustainable long term. It's when you have those last 5, 7, 10 pounds to go, you need to find ways to make it more sustainable because it's going to be more difficult.
Right. So then how, give me an example. How many more calories are you saying a day? Like, would you say like 2 days calorie day, like 2 days super, super strict, 1 day higher, 2 days back to 2 days kind of thing?
So it depends on what you want, but the one that I usually opt for at the beginning and will adjust based on the individual, I just call it the alternate deficit. Mm-hmm. 4 low calorie days and 3 higher calorie days. Mm. So generally it's and I don't know how many calories this person is eating or what their deficit is, but let's just say, for example, their maintenance calorie intake is 2000 calories, just to make it easy. Mm-hmm. Their maintenance daily calorie intake is 2000. I might have them on 1500 4 days of the week and at 2000 calories 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. That way, at the end of the week, it's a net calorie deficit. It's going to be slow. They're not going to be losing a pound a week. It's going to be slow and steady, but also way more sustainable. That way, for example, sometimes what we might do is we might put those 3 days, the higher calorie days, we'll call it Friday, Saturday, Sunday, which is where often people tend to eat more anyway. Mm-hmm. So this way, they have more leeway. They don't feel guilty if they eat over 1,500 calories. They can enjoy themselves with their family and friends. They can go out, just enjoy themselves more. And then Monday through Thursday, boom, 1,500 calories. They're in a net deficit at the end of the week. And at the end of the month, they're losing probably about a pound and a half, 2 pounds a month, very sustainably.
That's a great idea. And so about 500 calories approximately, yeah, is what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Okay. You stalled for a second. That's why I'm like, what? Hello? Hello? What is that? So, okay. So then that's kind of like the plateau also, like when someone's plateauing, when they're doing all the things right? And yet now they're stuck, right? Because they're, yep, not losing any more weight. Let's say this could be for anybody who is losing 50 pounds, 20 pounds, whatever, 5 pounds, then you plateau. Is it the same type of thing? So basically it's more of a manipulation of the calories you take in throughout the week to kind of, is it like kind of like muscle confusion, but like nutrition confusion, basically? So your body doesn't adapt. Is that the idea behind it?
I wouldn't say that. Because the reality is this, plateaus are normal. Plateaus are a normal part of the process. And this is in everything in life. It could be in a relationship with a husband and wife. Plateau could be in a learning curve. Like you're at school, maybe like you're learning something and like you get it. And all of a sudden, oh, I'm stuck here, whatever it is. And then you just have to work and work and work until you get it. And in strength training, if you increase your bench press by 10 pounds a month, just 10 pounds a month, that's not a lot, right? Like 10 pounds a month, like you're going to the gym 4 or 5 days a week, you would feel like you should increase more. If you increase 10 pounds a month to your bench press, that's 120 pounds at the end of the year. Oh. In 2 years, 240 pounds. 3 years, 360 pounds. Most people never bench press that much in their entire life, never mind in 3 years.
Right.
So we've live in this world that sort of demonizes and makes it seem as though plateaus, we're not supposed to have them. It's normal. The issue is as soon as someone hits a plateau, they quit. And for me, my job as a coach is just to make sure you don't quit. How can I get you on a program in a way that's sustainable and that you enjoy it and you don't quit? Because as long as you don't quit, you'll succeed. It's just, you just have to be consistent enough to make it happen. So plateaus are normal. It's part of the process. There's no need to try and avoid the plateau. It's just work through the fucking plateau and eventually it'll work. Just like, don't stop once you hit it.
That's such a good point. I like that. That's so true, right? In life, like everything has a plateau, right?
Everything.
It's everything. Not just about weight loss or strength training. It's so true. But you said
nothing is linear. Nothing is linear.
It's so true. Ever. That's a really good point. But you said something like, how do you get people not to quit? I think that's the biggest challenge, right? People are gung-ho. And yep. Then they don't see the results that they want, or it's taking too long or whatever reason. And then they kind of just stop. And so yep. What do you tell people? I hate the word motivation, but how do you get, I really do. I can't stand it. But how do you get, what's your strategy with your coaching, with your people that you actually see to get them yeah. to keep going and not kind of lose sight and not quit?
Yeah. So there's a bunch here. So part of it is in the tactics and a lot of it is in the actual, the education. So for example, a tactic could be like what I spoke about with the calorie cycling, mm-hmm. right? That's a tactic where if someone is having a really hard time being consistent, well, how do I get them not to quit? I give them a couple higher calorie days. It's going to be a little bit slower progress, but at least this way they can maintain it and sustain it as opposed to just quitting as soon as they go over 1500 calories.
Right.
So that's in a tactic perspective, but an education perspective is, or even more awareness perspective, a lot of people assume that the scale is like going to be linear down ever. Like they're going to lose weight every time they step on the scale, or they have one day of perfect nutrition and all of a sudden they should lose weight the next day. That's not how it fucking works. And so like, as soon as they say, well, why did the scale go up? I'm like, because it's like, it's normal. There are many reasons why the scale would go up. So a lot of times if they were left to their own devices, then they would just quit as soon as the scale spiked up. And I see that all the time. It's one of the reasons why so much of my content is geared towards like telling people to shut the fuck up about the scale and understand why the fluctuations happen and know that it's not a bad thing for the scale to spike up, especially for women. Like women have way more scale fluctuations than men do, mm-hmm. For many, many reasons, not least of which hormonal fluctuations massively impact your water retention and the scale. And a lot of people don't know, like they're like, well, how does water weight impact the scale? And it's very simple. Imagine you have a bucket of water. You're at the beach. You get to the beach. You're with your kids, whatever it is. You take the empty bucket of the water. You picked it, empty bucket. There's no water in it. It's super light. Doesn't weigh anything. It's very easy. You take that to the water. You try and fill it up with your kids. Boom. Now all of a sudden that bucket's really fucking heavy, right?
Yes.
That's what happens in your body, right? And for example, let's say you eat more carbs than usual. If you had a little puddle of water on your counter and you took a slice of bread and you just wiped that bread over that little puddle of water, what would happen? The water wouldn't just like all of a sudden fall off the counter. The bread would actually absorb mm-hmm. that water. And now that slice of bread would weigh more. For every gram of carb that you eat, your body will hold on to about 3 to 4 grams of water. So if you're eating an extra 100 grams of carbs, which is very fucking easy to do, you will hold on to more water. And it doesn't mean you gained fat because you ate carbs. It just means your body is holding on to more water, just like that bucket of water has more water in it, so it weighs more. So it's teaching people these things about scale fluctuations. It's teaching them about plateaus. They're not necessarily bad, just so they can say, when they face that issue, when they face the scale spike, when they face the plateau, when they go through this difficult time, they can logically say, not emotionally, but logically say, oh, this is normal.
This episode is brought to you by the Yap Media Podcast Network. I'm Hala Taha, CEO of the award-winning digital media empire, Yap Media, and host of Yap Young and Profiting Podcast, a number one entrepreneurship and self-improvement podcast where you can listen, learn, and profit. On Young and Profiting Podcast, I interview the brightest minds in the world, and I turn their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your daily life. Each week, we dive into a new topic like the art of side hustles, how to level up your influence and persuasion, and goal setting. I interview A-list guests on Young and Profiting. I've got the best guests, like the world's number one negotiation expert, Chris Voss, Shark Damon John, serial entrepreneurs, Alex and Layla Hormozi, and even movie stars like Matthew McConaughey. There's absolutely no fluff on my podcast, and that's on purpose. Every episode is jam-packed with advice that's going to push your life forward. I do my research, I get straight to the point, and I take things really seriously, which is why I'm known as the podcast princess and how I became one of the top podcasters in the world in less than 5 years. Young and Profiting Podcast is for all ages. Don't let the name fool you. It's an advanced show. As long as you want to learn and level up, you will be forever young. So join podcast royalty and subscribe to Young and Profiting Podcast, or Yap, like it's often called by my Yap fam, on Apple, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.